listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And hopefully you're, well, not hope, maybe you're listening live. Maybe you're podcasting this at a later date. Either way, it's good to know people are listening. So it's the second night of Passover. So what am I doing here? I should be home or somewhere else. But I had my Seder last night. And actually, we were just having a little Seder post-mortem here in the studio, going over various Seders from last night. And I had mine in my apartment, like I do every year. It's like one of my two nights of the year that I have a big thing like that. The other is Thanksgiving. I seriously feel like Thanksgiving was 2 days ago. And every year after Thanksgiving, when I'm putting away all my, you know, dishes and napkins and things, I think, well, next one's Passover, and that's a long ways away, and then, zip, it's here. So that's pretty weird that suddenly it's Passover again, and in about 5 more minutes, it'll be Thanksgiving again. Those are kind of the two anchors of my year, you know, when I cook the big dinner. So we had our Seder last night, and I think there were nine of us, and it was great. It's always really nice. It's one of my favorite holidays, and every year for all these many years of my life, I can't say that I've always enjoyed it, actually, because when I was a little kid, I had to go to my Orthodox relatives for Passover, and they would do the entire Seder in Hebrew, and I would be bored out of my mind and starving and miserable and fall asleep on the couch. So that was never really all that much fun. So once I became an adult and had my own place, I decided it was time to kind of reclaim that holiday, make it my own, and make it a lot less about the religion and a lot more about the story and the ritual and about the food, because that's really what's important. And so we use this kind of goofy, like non-gender specific, all-inclusive Haggadah that a friend of mine found. And, you know, we go through it and do the fun parts, the parts we like, and we never do the after dinner part of it, which was always the part that tortured me when I was a kid. But, you know, every year reading that story, like that, the story of Exodus, I always find it very moving. There's stuff in there that every year I well up a little bit, really. And it's an amazing story. And the symbolism of the holiday, too, I find very moving. And so I think that, like, reading the story every year of Exodus and then realizing that I'm very PMS this week. Not to tell you, you know, that much about me, but it's who I am. It made me feel kind of emotional, kind of reflective this week. It's, you know, it's a holiday that I love. It's my only real expression of being Jewish, because I'm not at all religion. And other than my sarcasm and dark sense of humor and occasional ironically used Yiddish word, that's about it for me. So I like to take it seriously. And because it's also like a universal story that everybody can relate to, you know, whether your people were slaves in Egypt thousands of years ago, or maybe slaves in Egypt right now to a fallen dictator. You know, there are a lot of parallels going right now. There are always people yearning to break free and breathe free. And everyone has their own personal exodus, whether it's literal, physical, metaphorical, you know, whatever. We all have shackles of oppression in some form or another that we've tried to break free from, traveled a long journey metaphorically. So whatever that is, you know, it seemed appropriate that we would sit down and eat a big meal and talk about that every night. So it also seemed appropriate that I would be asked today, well, I was asked a few weeks ago, but to today be a judge on a competition. I was asked to be a judge for a sort of like Iron Chef cook-off, Iron Chef style cook-off today at the Children's Aid Society. And if you ever want to like live in New York and feel sorry for yourself and feel like, oh, I live in New York and I don't have what everybody else has. You know, I don't have the money people in New York have. I don't have the big, huge, beautiful apartment. I don't have this. I don't have that. Because everybody, it seems like in New York, has so much more than you. Spend an afternoon with the kids from the Children's Aid Society, and then you'll maybe start to reevaluate your whininess a little bit. And I like having those experiences. It's like when I go work in Vietnam and I work with the kids there, it's like a good, you know, kick in the ass saying like, shut up and stop complaining because you have so much. So at the Children's Aid Society, they were hosting this Kids Iron Chef competition where all these teams from all these different schools around the city competed. I think they're like after school cooking programs that these schools sponsor. And through sort of mutual acquaintance friends, they asked me to be a judge. I was there along with the commissioner of public affairs, Nazli Parvizi. I hope I'm saying that right. She was another judge and a couple other people. And we had a great time. And these kids were just, they were like so super energetic and into it and excited. And I judged the middle school kids competition, but apparently in the morning there was the elementary school kids competition. And I'm sorry I missed that because apparently it was like the cutest thing ever. But you know, these are kids who probably have had to overcome a lot worse stuff in their personal exodus or enslavement than most of us middle class people, you know, have ever really had to endure. So it was exciting to be there. And how it worked was, it was, you know, they have, it's a healthy competition, healthy cooking competition. They're in these after school programs to teach them about healthy food, healthy cooking. One of them was interesting because one of them combines literacy with cooking, and they read magazines and recipes and cookbooks and stuff as a way to sort of improve their literacy and also their health and food literacy, which I thought was kind of cool. So there were these seven different teams, and what they had to do was they had to create an entree that had a non-meat protein, a whole grain, and two vegetables. And so they cooked for about an hour, and we walked around and talked to the various teams. And then as soon as the team was done, they would bring their dishes up to the judges, and we tasted. And it was really good. It was really interesting, the different approaches that these kids took to this competition. Some of them really got into the vegetable element of it and had, you know, more than two vegetables. Some had five, six, seven incorporated. And some of them seemed to kind of like forget that the vegetable was a big part of it. They had to use non-meat proteins, and probably four or five of the teams used salmon. I think there were four salmons, which I wasn't so happy to see. One of them used tilapia. Not so great. One team incorporated beans into a soup, a bean puree. So that was good. And then I think two teams had shrimp. And, you know, of course, me, like, I'm thinking, like, okay, that's good. I guess it's good that they're learning to use these non-meat proteins. They're, you know, these are kids who could easily spend their life eating Happy Meals and, you know, chicken fingers. And so at least they're eating this other stuff and cooking with it. But then, of course, you know, the Chef Smarty Pants food critic in me said, well, except, you know, all the fish and all the seafood that they're using is farmed, and that has its whole set of problems. And here they're serving farm salmon, and everybody's cheering about how healthy it is, but farm salmon isn't healthy. You know, of course, in my brain, I'm like spinning out all the other stuff that always goes on in my head when I see the kind of contradiction and hypocrisy in the food world. But nonetheless, I tried to suspend that in the spirit of competition and the spirit of the holiday, and I suspended that very well, people. You'd be proud of me. And I was very supportive. And So the kids, they did a great job. It was really amazing what they did. They had coaches, but the coaches weren't allowed to help them during the competition. And so the overall winner was there. You know, everybody won in a different category, of course, you know, presentation and healthiness and originality and all that. But the overall winning team came from, of course, I can't remember the name of the school. I'll remember it during the break. But what they did was a really nice little piece of salmon. They left the skin on. They crisped it up, although it wasn't a nonstick pan. So, of course, my head was spinning out of control about that. I kept it in check. This nice little piece of salmon, very small. It was good. They had their ratio on the plate was right. And then they had a lot of vegetables. They had big, huge asparagus, big pile of sauteed peppers, and brown rice. And they had made this really delicious pesto. Their presentation was beautiful. I said to people, this is like the kind of plate that if you went to like a catered event, you would be very happy to get. And that sounds critical, but it's not, because you go to a lot of catered events and you get a piece of salmon and a couple vegetables and it's always terrible. And this was like really good catered food. And that's a huge compliment. It wasn't necessarily what I would want in a restaurant, but their execution was excellent. And so we gave them best overall because they got their vegetables cooked right. Their salmon was cooked just right. Everything was flavorful. The presentation was great. They did a really good job, I have to say. The second best team did a cornmeal crusted tilapia fish taco, and they made salsa for it from arugula, red onions, strawberries, cilantro, and mint. Yeah, very cutting edge, you know, really nice, really delicious, really creative. We didn't give them best overall because they didn't have the volume of vegetables on the plate. But nonetheless, everybody did an amazing job up there at the Children's Aid Society. And I have to say, the people who work there were working their hearts out at this competition. And if you're going to give money to a cause, I would say this year, give it to them. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about Passover. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And this is the Heritage Radio Network. And tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. So it's Passover. And I was talking a little bit about that in the first segment. And saying that I had a Seder last night at my house, which I always do. And one of the things I love about the Seder is that all the foods have different symbolic meaning. And I like that. I like symbolism in foods. I like symbolism in general. I think it's fascinating that people assign meaning to things that way. And eggs, of course, are the big symbol of Passover, of Easter, of spring, of rebirth, of the roundness of the year. You know, so the egg features really prominently, I think, in the ritual. You put the egg on your Seder plate, the Easter egg, you know, and I think the egg has probably been a symbol of spring, you know, way before Christianity, going way back to pagan times. And I'll talk a little bit more about eggs later on. But I also love, you know, the bitter herbs, the horseradish, the salt water, all of that stuff, you know, and everything is symbolic of spring and of affliction and of tears and of mortar. I love all that stuff. And of course, you know, you put all that together and you eat it with your matzah. And if you've been listening to this show for a couple of years, you know that I always make my own matzah at Passover every year. And that's sort of my most fun, favorite part of the whole thing is making the matzah. And this year my niece came over and she helped me too. She's old enough now. Well, she sort of helped. She wasn't so into rolling it out, but she helped. So this year's matzah was half whole wheat and had black and white sesame seeds in it. I always put some kind of seed in it, usually sesame seeds. I always add something else to it. But this year, half white, half whole wheat, black and white sesame seeds. This was the year of diversity matzah. This was like the multi-culti spectrum matzah. And it was good, but I have to say the putting that whole wheat flour in it made it harder to work and harder to roll out. But it still came out great. And when I was planning the menu, I wanted this menu to be like this kind of springiest menu. And but that's difficult because it's April and there's just not that much out yet. If you walk around the farmer's market, there still isn't that much around yet. So it was sort of, you know, foods that are traditional for spring but not necessarily always available or not, you know, the first things that pop out of the ground. Although, of course, here we go again with the dandelions. I had dandelion greens out as my spring greens, bitter herbs to dip, because you know how I feel about the dandelion, which I talked about last week, of course. And then I made a soup this year that was a cold. I decided to serve a cold soup because my apartment is so hot all the time. So I made fresh pea soup this year. Last year I did carrot. This year I did fresh, well, they were frozen organic peas from Trader Joe's, but still fresh pea soup as opposed to like dried split pea soup. So fresh pea soup served cold. So simple, really good. I just sweated out some onions, a little celery, threw in a little bit of dry vermouth, some chicken stock, brought that all up to a simmer, shut it off, and threw in the peas because I didn't want those frozen peas to cook because frozen vegetables are already cooked and I didn't want them to discolor. So I threw them in so it would start to cool down immediately, pureed it, strained it twice. That's where Soph, my niece, came in. She strained. And then we chilled it down. And we served it cold, and it was this, like, beautiful bright green color. Really refreshing. Really nice. Cold soup. It was great. And, of course, I served lamb, because I think you have to serve lamb in the spring. A lot of people serve brisket for Passover. I don't really... I guess I get why, because you sort of set it and forget it. You make it, you put it in the oven, you don't have to worry about it until you're ready to eat. And if it sits in there for extra hours, it's okay. But brisket is not a symbol of lamb. There is no spring brisket running around. It's all about lamb. Lamb is the meat of spring. That's what you should eat. So we had rack of lamb, and I made charmoula for it as a sauce. Charmoula is like Moroccan pesto. So it's like if you took pesto and you took it on a little trip to Morocco and it got all spiced up, that's what I made. And I also pureed Marcona almonds in it to thicken it. It was really good. Of course, we had asparagus because it's spring. We had baby carrots because it's spring. And not those stupid little stubby fake baby carrots either from the supermarket. True baby carrots. Little teeny tiny potatoes from the green market. And then my friend Lauren brought dessert and he made a strawberry rhubarb matzah crumble, which was great. And you have to eat rhubarb in the spring. It's a law in my house. And then my friend Lori, who owns Moho Coco Chocolate Company, well, her brother owns it. She works for it. They've both been guests on the show here, Lori and Jeff Pizzina. She brought very, very dark chocolate with cocoa nibs in it to have. Now, chocolate's not really symbolic for Passover, is it? But their chocolate comes from Belize, from their own plant, their own chocolate processing company that does like 100% fair trade, local, organic, Belizean cacao. So a lot of chocolate comes from places that are like ancient Egypt and the Jews are building the pyramids. This doesn't. So I thought this was symbolic too, that this was chocolate made by people who are free from their colonial oppressors or the chocolate industrial complex that formerly controlled their chocolate making. So that worked also. Now, if it had been like a truly kind of springy menu, I would have added in things like ramps and morels and fava beans and all of those things. But I didn't really have time to track all that stuff down. I'm a busy girl, you know, and it's you can't even get some of that stuff yet. There aren't any morels around yet. Fava beans I could probably get frozen, but I didn't want to peel them. Maybe there's some ramps and garlic scapes in the market, but I haven't even seen them yet. So I decided to just go with more traditional spring items. And you know that last week, of course, I talked about dandelion greens again. See, I keep bringing them up. I'm a little obsessed with them. But I want to let you know that over the weekend, I was up at Tiny Bungalow Land, and there were dandelions growing all over my lawn. And so in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, I went out and I picked all the leaves from the lawn, and I cooked them up again with some eggs like I did last week. And they were eggs that I had bought at the Union Square Market, like local, pastured, delicious, great, perfect eggs that I cooked with my dandelion greens that I picked right out of my lawn. So I thought, well, that kind of balanced out the locavore, you know, quotient of the weekend, since the lamb that I served at Passover probably came from Colorado or New Zealand. And I know I keep mentioning those dandelions, but that'll be it. I'm done with it until next spring. That's the end of the dandelion conversation, because now the dandelions in the lawn are starting to put up their flowers. And once the flowers come up, you don't want to eat them anyway. But you can buy bunches of them in the store that don't have flowers. Okay, that's it for dandelions. I'm done. And that's it for my Seder meal. I'm done with that too. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little more about eggs. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And if you are a fan of this show, you can always find us on Facebook, you know, at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I would love to hear from you. I've been getting great comments from people lately, and it's always great to hear from my listeners and know that people are listening to what I say. You can also always leave comments on the Heritage Radio Network website on a specific show. You can leave comments there. And remember that you can podcast any show ever aired on this network on iTunes. So you could listen to 2 years worth of Why We Cook next time you're driving cross country or something like that. You could just download all of them. So in the last part of the show, I was talking about how it's Passover, and now it's going to be Easter, I think, this Sunday, right? Yeah, Sunday. Just got the thumbs up from the control room about, yes, Easter is this Sunday. And, you know, I mentioned earlier in the show about eggs, and of course, there is no greater symbol of spring, of Easter, of Passover than the egg. It's a symbol of rebirth, renewal. If you've ever gone to a shiva, you know, when someone Jewish dies and everybody sits shiva, you're supposed to eat a lot of round foods. Did you know that? You eat round food. When my grandmother died, people brought us so many bagels that we had bagels in our freezer, I think, for like years afterwards. So you're supposed to eat bagels and hard-boiled eggs and things like that, things that are round. But I, you know, and that's cool. I love that. I love the symbolism of it. But I really feel, and I have talked about this before, that if you're going to eat eggs, you need to eat good eggs. You need to find a farmer. Go to the farmer's market if you have one and buy eggs from someone who's pasturing their eggs. You have to get the eggs from the chickens who ate what the chickens are supposed to eat. things like worms and grubs and bugs and little bits of dirt and grass and plants, and then maybe a little handful of corn here and there. What's making me crazy is I'm seeing eggs being sold now where they're trumpeting that they're vegetarian fed. But hens aren't vegetarians. They want to eat those bugs and grubs and worms and things. And why would you want to make them into vegetarians? You don't see them sitting down eating a bowl of salad every night. They need some worms in their salad. And, you know, people, when I say this to people, they say, well, you know, they're so much more expensive. I mean, a dozen good farmer's market eggs can be $4 or $5. And I say, well, break that down into a per egg cost basis. And you're looking at 35, 40 cents an egg. Is that really so much? How much are you spending on your basic, you know, piece of steak? $25 a pound? So think about it. Just because supermarket eggs are $1.50 a dozen, green market eggs are $5 a dozen, that's not such a massive price increase when you break it out per egg. Now, of course, if you are very limited in funds, then that's a different story. But I think the average person can afford to do that. Even at 40, 50 cents an egg, you're still looking at an amazing deal for how much protein you get. And those yolks are so full of minerals and super nutrition and beta carotene that you got to eat those yolks too, people. Don't get rid of the yolks. And I was thinking about this because my best friend Lisa was out in Vegas during the week at the NAB show with her husband. I don't even know what that stands for. National Association of Broadcasters, I think, something like that. And her father lives out there. And so she met up with her father. And she said that her father took her to this place in Vegas called the Peppermill, which is this institution in Vegas where you can get breakfast all, you know, all day long. And she said, she called me this morning and she said, the omelets at the Peppermill are made from 10 eggs each. 10 eggs per omelet. And that's the only size. You have to get the 10-egg omelet. Who needs to eat a 10-egg omelet? You could feed the entire village in Vietnam where my friend lives with a 10-egg omelet and have food left over. The average American does not need to eat that. And to me, that's, it's just the excess of Vegas. It's just, you know, excess for excess's sake, or, you know, let's waste food because we can feel like we're so extravagant. This is Vegas. We're blowing money, you know, away. We're flushing it down the toilet, basically. Let's waste food. This is America. We have the luxury of wasting food. And that makes me want to scream. Because not only are you wasting food that someone went to the trouble to cook and use the energy and the resources to ship and to get to you, but those poor chickens who are being so exploited in egg farm factories to produce these eggs for you, you know, they're living horrible lives too. They're living in their own personal Egypt on this Passover. And my friend, of course, thought it was a horrible thing. And she's about to adopt a baby from Ethiopia. You know, so she's looking at that 10-egg omelet and thinking like, boy, I could take this with me when I go get the baby and feed the whole orphanage for a week on this 10-egg omelet that we feel so cavalier about making and not finishing and throwing away. You know, we have this culture of food that's too cheap. And actually, just this morning, I was reading, I think on grist.com, an article about landfills and how much of a landfill is made up of food. And I've talked about that on this show before because, you know, I'm really thrifty and I hate waste. And they said that something like 40% of our landfills are just made up of food waste, that we are throwing away almost half of our food that we purchase or produce every day. So that's pretty sick. You know, so the next time you want to buy like the dozen of the $1.50 eggs, or you want to buy the dozen of the $4 eggs or $5 eggs, think about your purchase and think about what it means, and don't throw any of them out. That's for sure. And what, one of the things that when I was judging that competition today that we noticed is that none of the teams actually chose to use eggs as their protein. And I was surprised. They had to do a non-meat protein and nobody went for eggs. You know, I'm wondering why. I think they, you know, we're so conditioned to sort of think, well, we need protein on the plate. It's got to be, you know, a chunk of something, some animal protein. And, you know, so like I said, a bunch of them used fish. One used beans, but they were pureed into their soup. And frankly, their soup was horrible. And nobody used eggs, and I was a little sad. And unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I was going to talk about matzah brei, because when it's Passover and you have all your matzah and you can't eat any bread for the week, which I don't follow, I don't observe that, but a lot of people do. What do you do in the morning? You make matzah brei. You take your matzah, you soak it in milk, and then you fry it up with eggs. And you make sort of this kind of weird pancakey thing of eggs and matzah. And some people put in onions. And I, of course, was thinking, well, if I was going to make matzah brei, put in a bunch of herbs. I have all these dandelion greens left over from the Seder. I would chop up those, mix them in. I would make it more of like a creamy, soft matzah egg scramble, but a really soft one. Because if I cook an egg, I don't want it to go past the point where it loses any moisture at all. I like my eggs creamy and soft and runny. And the only matzah brei I've ever eaten has been sort of brown and crusty, and I don't like that. Anyway, unfortunately, we're out of time, so thank you for listening. Thanks to Dan taking over in the control tower tonight, and we'll see you next week. Good night.